I'm the Ninja Fat Man from the Doom Ninja Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopX Cast.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Live right here on PopX Cast. Austin Burke, this is episode 40, dude.
Holy 40.
40.
Oh, wow.
I can't make this stuff up, man. I know. We're this is really, really bizarre. I mean, this is so amazing. When you envision the podcast, you know, I started having back in 2015, November, I was just thinking about, you know, I'd love to get back into podcasting and do it. And here we are 40 episodes later. Getting That's ready crazy. To dive into the history of comics once again. Right off the top of the bat, man, I want to see how you're doing, because I heard that you were bit by a radioactive spider.
You know, Joe, it was a very superhero origin story kind of Thanksgiving. You know, I got bit by a spider on Thanksgiving twice, so that doubled my chances of becoming Spider-Man. But it's not hit me yet, Joe. Still waiting on the six-pack and the spider powers.
So you got bit by, was it a black widow?
It was a black widow. And I know that because my mom caught it in a jar and it was still alive. So it was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Wait, stop. Your mom caught the black widow?
Yeah, we were sitting in the hospital and my arm was completely numb. And I look over and she pulls a jar out of her purse. And I said, Mom, when did you have time to catch that? And she said, well, I wanted to do it just in case we needed the venom. So, hey, she's the real superhero here, Joe.
Holy
Not me.
Cow, man. Dude, it was still alive?
It was still alive, man. Worst pain I've ever had in my entire life. It went through my entire body. It took until just a couple days ago for me to, like, move my hand. But, hey. I'm moving my hand now, so that's all.
Well, I just realized that when I came on that the broadcast going out to YouTube, my microphone was turned off. So you heard me, but they didn't. But welcome, everybody. This is Pop Culture, PopX Cast, Pop Culture's amazing comic book history podcast. This is episode number 40 coming to you live right here on our YouTube stream. And I want to welcome everybody over in the chat room. Look at the chat room right now. We got Moonshadow and Luke and Lindsay's holding down the fort like always, like a boss. And we have Carlos Phoenix hanging out with us. Holy cow, we've got a slew of just the regulars. Thank you so much for coming out. Hey, guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live in the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. And come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. If you guys missed last week's episode 39, Origin Stories, Aquaman, and Killer Croc, check out our official website at PopXcast.com. Also, be sure to head over to Google Play and or iTunes, click that subscribe button, and catch up on some amazing shows from the PopX archive. While you're there, leave us a glowing and beautiful 5-star rating and review. We certainly appreciate that. Joseph, I'm back.
Yes.
And I'm ready to go.
I know, man. Are you so before we dive into the news, I just got to ask, are you excited for Christmas season?
I've never been more excited for Christmas, man.
I can tell.
Take a break. I'm so excited for Santa Claus, man.
You have to let me know if you wake up in a few days and you have an extra limb, or you're like spewing like web shooter stuff out of a weird part of your body. That would be really awesome to know that. Maybe document it. We can even have it on the podcast.
I am waiting for the Spider-Man transformation. Okay. And here's the thing, though. I went to the doctor's office. They flushed my superpowers out of my system. I honestly think that's why I don't have superpowers yet. But I'm waiting on it.
The darn pharmaceutical industry. Why I oughta. All right. Anyway, we got the news coming up for you right now. Don't go nowhere. We will be right back here on PopX.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
Look at Mike rolling out the old the globe graphic there. That was kind of cool, that. Right? Yeah. All right, so leading us off this week, we have Bourne Identity director Doug Liman will be releasing the first ever virtual reality, yes, you heard me right, VR series, and this is a show called Invisible. The six-part series consists of 5 to 6 mini episodes that are viewed in total 360 degrees and will be released for Samsung Gear VR, Oculus Rift, and HTC Vive. What do you think about that, Austin? The first ever show filmed truly in 360.
I've been waiting on this announcement since the announcement of virtual reality. I mean, this is something that could completely change the movie industry, Joe.
Yeah,
it's
weird,
incredible,
man.
What they're doing.
And could you imagine sitting in the movie theater, putting on some really high-tech connected goggles, and as you watch Avengers Infinity War, you can look around and watch everything. Can you imagine the amount of just creating that 3D space? Golly, that just blows my mind, man.
2016, bro. This is incredible, the time that we're living in right now. And I like Doug Liman a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think he can do something very creative, and maybe this is going to change the game, Joe.
And I think so. And I think, honestly, there was a little teaser. Suicide Squad, Warner Brothers had released a little snippet of a 360 walkthrough. It was when they were walking through headquarters. And you could actually go through and watch as the team are exploding through these like zombie hordes, and you can actually rotate the camera in full 360 and see Harley Quinn and Killer Croc and just the whole gang and Deadshot, of course. And you can actually just pan around and watch everybody individually. It's very crazy. And it's pretty cool. So it kind of like sparked this idea. Can you imagine, though, just sitting in a theater for the first time and watching a VR film, a 2-hour VR film where you're totally immersed. I mean, part of me just wants to stand up and just look around and below and up and above. But I think maybe that's not too far away from the future, you know?
No, see, I didn't even know they had something like this in development.
Yeah.
So if we're getting a series, we're definitely getting a movie in the next 5 years. Absolutely.
I know.
Oh, man. So keeping it in the DC realm, we're talking about Mark Hamill, who is reprising his role as the Trickster in the Flash midseason finale. Mm. So this is so cool. John Wesley Shipp and Mark Hamill will appear together for the first time since the two were together in the 1990 version of The Flash. What a cool reunion. Joe, give me your thoughts on this.
Well, I remember watching the original show on television when it aired. And we're not talking about reruns or picking up the Flash DVD series. I remember seeing Mark Hamill as the Trickster, and I didn't understand that he was the Trickster at the time. I was like, "Oh, that must be their version of the Joker or something," and it kind of was, you know, in a way. But it's really cool to see that the Trickster, and I think this is taking place on a different Earth. So this is like Earth 13 or something like that, I think. But my gosh, Jay Garrick,
dude. Good does that picture look, man. That's awesome.
It is great. And, you know, it's cool to see the guy that really was Flash come back as the Flash. And the guy that, I mean, Mark Hamill just reprising that role. He kind of looks Joker-esque in that picture.
He looks acts Joker.
Yeah.
So that's
look at the little clock there. It says boom on it.
You know, he wants with everything in him to just bring out the Joker on screen.
Yeah, you know, he's just wanting to do just bust out that laugh, but he can't. Yeah. Oh man. But
sadly,
maybe one day we can. Well, keeping in the DC realm of things, this is kind of new and very interesting coming out this week. Streaming services are becoming kind of more of a preferred method of media service in the modern day and age. And the Marvel shows on Netflix, like you've seen Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Daredevil, and so many other Stranger Things, for example, are coming to Netflix. Well, the DC Comics has decided to go on a one step further, and they're launching their own streaming service exclusively to their product with all live action and animated films and shows. DC may have enough to attract subscribers on a permanent basis. So can you imagine DC streaming live?
That is so cool.
You get all the movies, all the cartoons, all the shows.
Animation?
Yeah, get all the CW stuff.
Hey man, I would pay for that. That's awesome.
That would be worth about $8 or $9 a month, just to get part of that.
That is incredible.
Well,
they definitely have enough to do it, though. That's the thing.
That's very true. And it's a good time to be a nerd because we're all broke anyway. So just keep taking it, DC and Marvel. Just keep taking it.
Take all our money.
Hey,
speaking of taking our money, Regal Cinema is releasing a Rogue One Ultimate ticket, which entitles the ticket holder to see the movies an unlimited amount of time during the duration of the film while it's in theaters in any format, 2D, 3D, IMAX, and RPX. The ticket will cost $100 plus shipping. Joe,
so
are you going to do that?
No, I'm not, actually. As a matter of fact, I have already pre-purchased my ticket for December the 15th, and I will be seeing it that night. But I'm not going to be doing. I do want to see this in IMAX. This looks like a movie that's definitely IMAX worthy.
Yes, it does.
But I don't think I can drop $100 and see it unlimited. That's a bit my bet. I mean, it does include IMAX, which is $15-$20
a
pop. So.
It's
a bit pricey, I think. But, I mean, so, it's pretty interesting. So, and there's a comment, too, referring to our previous news article Moonshadow made. It said WWE did it. DC has plenty to stream on the channel as well, talking about the streaming service. And that's true.
Okay.
WWE did launch their streaming platform last year. So you can watch all the WrestleManias, all the
Royal Rumble. And it worked out very well for them, too.
And so what's next? Marvel, hopefully. But But Rogue One, are you excited to see it?
Oh, man. My level of excitement is just below Force Awakens, but Force Awakens was kind of out of this world, man. I can't wait to see what they do. And early word is good.
That's good. What do you think about the no crawl at the beginning?
That's a little disappointing. I'll have to get used to it. We'll see.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I know I'm going to get upset with it, but then 30 seconds after it, I'm going to be... He's so locked into the movie that it's not going to matter.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah, you're right. And, 5, 10, 15 minutes in the movie, you'll be like, okay, screw the crawl. This is awesome.
What's the crawl? What is
what is this crawl you speak of? So moving on here, this past week, we're kind of keeping in the DC realm of things here from Lucasfilm over back now to DC Comics. The past week has a four-part series CW DC Universe crossover. And it previously mentioned that joining the four-show poster would reveal in the background the old Star Labs building, which had a striking resemblance to something very familiar from the comic books and the old video games. The building may not seem like much now, but in the time, it will be the Hall of Justice for the DC CW's universe. When Speedy asks Barry, "What is this place?" he says, "It's an old hall or hangar owned by Star Labs. So get ready, batten down the hatch. We're going to have some Justice League action."
You see the small tear coming down my cheek.
I know. It's a beautiful thing. And they got all the key players. I mean, they have Supergirl. Yep. They have Arrow. They have Flash, multiple Flashes, as a matter of fact. And then Firestorm. They got the Firestorm. You can't use and Adam. Adam, yeah. Black Canary.
I can't. CW is killing it, dude. They are killing it. Yeah.
They're owning it. And so let's pause right here for a minute. Did you see the four-part crossover?
Oh, I loved it.
Okay.
So, I loved it.
All right. So the Arrow one for me didn't quite hit the nail on the head because I didn't like the fact that they were in the spaceship and they were in some kind of – it was interesting to see some of the old characters. It was interesting to see that and, like, see Oliver Queen's father and mother alive again, which you know is totally not like – when you saw that, you're like, okay, this is definitely a dream sequence or something.
This is a dream. Yeah, it's a dream.
Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Yeah. For anybody.
Should have said that first.
But really, though, there wasn't much – everything that went on in that episode didn't matter. You know what I mean? It was all in their minds anyway.
Yeah, and that was the one episode that just kind of threw me. I was like, that was really a waste of 40 some minutes of programming there that just
– I think they wanted to focus on the Arrow characters. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Just Speedy trying to battle with her mom and father. Yeah, I understand. But they did bring you back, though, in DC's Legends where they did the time loop thing. They had to go back and talk, and it was like Area 51, you know, it kind of had that old vibe to it. It was kind of cool. I liked it. I dug it. I need to watch it again, though, just to kind of catch some things.
There were parts of it also that went – I felt like they took away from story a little bit to focus more on, hey, we have all these heroes together. I would have liked to have seen some more interaction maybe between Supergirl and some of the other characters.
Yeah, I would have.
But otherwise, I think they did a good job of like the fight scenes.
Supergirl was pretty much a boss. Throughout the entire four-part series.
Everybody was so amazed.
She was pretty much a boss. Yeah.
So moving on, at Disney's Epcot in Orlando, Florida, that's where you are, Joe, they will be holding a one-night after-hours event on December 5th, celebrating all things Star Wars. And with the use of their projection system, they will convert Spaceship Earth into the Death Star. Holy cow. Just make it the Death Star.
I just want to go and take pictures. I may have to do a drive-by on that one.
You have to, man.
Yeah.
You absolutely have.
Yeah, that's pretty sick right there.
That is, oh, man, just look at that. Come on, man.
That's gorgeous. I can't stop looking at it.
Let's just look at it for the rest
Let's just pause for the next 40 minutes as we just
drool over the Death Star.
All right, moving on. Well, this is kind of in the theme park industry news way of thing. Nintendo-themed areas are coming to three Universal parks in Osaka, Orlando, and Hollywood. Yeah, you heard me right. Nintendo. The company says these parts of each park will be expansive, immersive, and interactive with rides and attractions, restaurants, and shops. Details on exactly which characters and games of the areas will pull are said to be coming soon as all the planning and design is well underway. Oh my God, you're walking into the world of Link, Mario, Metroid, Donkey Kong?
Oh man. What? If they don't have an F-Zero roller coaster with Captain Falcon, they have to. Come on, man.
I don't know, man. That's just like...
This is so cool.
I mean, just reading that, a little bit of urine came out. I was so excited. And I just pooped all over myself. No, but no, seriously, though, I mean, it is truly amazing that they're creating this. I mean, we saw what they did with the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and I know, Austin, you were dying to get down here and see that. And but they have created literally the entire film sets. You're walking into Diagon Alley. You're walking into Hogwarts. And it is amazing. I can't begin to imagine what they're creating with this kind of technology that we have today and just the theming and the design. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Hey, maybe we will finally get real-life Mario Kart. Just think about it.
And, you know, Sonic and Sega – now have a partnership, so we may have Sonic the Hedgehog as well.
Oh man!
And Knuckles. Come on, and Knuckles.
Too much. This is too much for
dude.
One to go, man. We gotta save it.
It's great.
That is incredible. But yeah, we'll go ahead and move on to some good news and some bad news in one story. So for Aquaman fans, the good news is that Warner Brothers Pictures has officially set an Aquaman release date. The bad news is that the Aquaman release date falls a little bit later than initially anticipated. So look for the James Wan film to hit regular 3D and IMAX theaters October 5th, 2018. That's 3 months after the July 27th date that WB had earmarked for the release that was widely assumed to be Aquaman. So, Joe, what do you think about Warner Brothers pushing back Aquaman like they did The Flash not so long ago? Are they in trouble?
I don't think they're in trouble. I think they're trying to focus more on Justice League and Wonder Woman.
Okay.
It makes sense. I mean, they don't – it feels like to me if they try to rush in and do Aquaman this year, 2017, it would have probably felt rushed to an extent. And coming off with the criticism that they had with Batman versus Superman, which was very mixed reviews, that's still holding in like a 55% approval rating. So it's just kind of like some love it, some hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, they're probably approaching Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and The Flash with very cautious, steps. So
if they are pushing it back for story reasons and for script reasons, I think that's great. And I think Aquaman has the potential to be maybe DC's best movie yet. So I hope they do a good job with it.
And it's just look at him. He's gorgeous.
He's so cool.
He's great.
I like him.
But moving along with Spider-Man coming out this week, we have some news about Homecoming details. Ooh. Spidey gets a Ditko upgrade. And we're talking about Mike Ditko. Is it John Ditko? Ditko, never mind. Sony Pictures held a brief panel at Comic-Con Experience 2016 at São Paulo, Brazil, where a clip from Marvel's upcoming Spider-Man Homecoming was screened, though we didn't have a clip itself, and it was kind of like limited, and they're deleting it on YouTube right now as people are trying to upload it. Marvel's own Ryan Penagos recapped the clip on Twitter, revealing a special upgrade to Spider-Man's suit from the film inspired by Steve Ditko's original costume design. Now, if you know Steve Ditko, we do have a picture somewhere in the news feed of like the original Steve Ditko comic book artwork that he did for Amazing. What was it? Amazing Fantasy number one or something? Fantasy series is like I can't remember, but it was the first appearance of Spider-Man. I want to say it's Amazing Fantasy number one, but Fantasy Comics it was Marvel's premier comic where they introduced. But it was really cool that they're honoring Steve Ditko's original work through this suit and this film franchise.
I like how Marvel is going back to the basics with Spider-Man. Yeah. You know what I mean? They throwing us that old style suit in Civil War and going back to, the heart of what made Peter Parker special, making him young again. I think they're going to kill it with this movie.
Yeah.
I think they're going to kill
this
character. As
absolutely.
Well. Yeah. So that's very exciting. But moving on, in April of 2015, it was revealed that Telltale Games, this is so exciting, and Marvel Entertainment had partnered up for a new title, and now the game has officially been revealed at the Game Awards, and it's none other than the Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm. The first of 5 episodes in Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series, will premiere digitally in 2017 on consoles, PC, and mobile devices. Joe, are you excited for Guardians?
Well, knowing that Telltale Games are being a part of this, because you remember the Back to the Future series that they created, which was really awesome and immersive. It was like a 5-6 part series.
They're so good. They're so good at storytelling.
I'm pretty excited to see what they can do with this.
Yeah.
So, yes. Yeah, I will probably be a sucker and download this on my console and play it. Guilty. Guilty.
Yep. Charged. Well,
in terms of video games, we have another one coming for you, and this one was just released just a couple of days ago. This one barely made the news list. Marvel versus Capcom Infinity. So it's going to be coming out. Gameplay trailer revealed the following yesterday. It's the first ever teaser. So it's Marvel versus Capcom Infinite and will be featured in it. I remember watching it. It was Iron Man and Captain Marvel going up against Ryu and Mega Man. And it was stunning 4K quality. And it was gorgeous. Yes. It was beautiful. And it was amazing to see where they're advancing with the Street Fighter series and just how far they've brought things. And just on a side note too, Injustice 2 Gods Among Us, they just released a 15-minute walkthrough that you can actually watch the gameplay. And Injustice, if you're not familiar with it, is the DC universe. So you can actually be Superman versus Batman, or Gorilla Grodd versus, you know, Solomon Grundy or whatever. It's really cool. It's a really cool game. So we have two awesome games coming up in 2017, Marvel versus Capcom and Injustice 2 Gods Among Us. So it'll be awesome.
The thing that I liked about this, though, is they focused on Captain Marvel. And I like how Marvel's kind of pushing her to the forefront now, man. You see how powerful she's going to be. And that kind of gets me a little bit psyched for Captain Marvel, the movie. So
I'm feeling
very
you, brother. Excited. I'm feeling you.
She's awesome. All right. So we are talking Marvel. Let's talk about Doctor Strange.
Oh.
So they reach $634.9 million worldwide.
Holy
Marvel
cow.
Marvel Studios' Doctor Strange. They added $6.5 million, and they have collected $215.3 million domestically after 5 weeks. In North America, Doctor Strange has already passed the lifetime totals of The Incredible Hulk, which made $135 million, Captain America the First Avenger, $177 million, Ant-Man, $180 million, Thor, $181 million, and they just passed Thor the Dark World at $206 million. Joe, are you impressed with Doctor Strange's success?
You know, I have to say, I'm not shocked.
No.
It is that good of a film.
It is, absolutely. It deserves everything.
It deserves all the accolades. And then some, because it's such a fresh film for the Marvel franchise.
And this is the one that they were most afraid of, too. So I like that Kevin Feige's like, okay, I can do what I want now.
Yeah,
after this, they're like, we can do what we want.
Exactly. Well, we have our last new segment of the week, and we're going to be getting into the history of comics here very shortly. Marvel Studios has released a brand new Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 trailer just within the past 24 hours as we are recording this on December the 4th. So this was released yesterday, and they are back on the big screen. Walt Disney Pictures and Marvel Studios have just released this. Austin, you did a reaction video to this, right?
I did, immediately.
And I remember I was watching it this morning over my cup of coffee. I was watching your reaction video. Ridiculously cute, by the way, especially when Baby Groot was running around. What are your thoughts on this? First of all, the music. The music. It's got to be about the music. And the comedy. Music and comedy were the two big things that hit me.
Okay. So first of all, I want to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy is the movie for me in the Marvel Universe that I saw the most potential in. I think the sequel can outdo the original. Because now that James Gunn has proven himself, I think Marvel's going to give him full creative control. And just from seeing this trailer, first of all, hearing that soundtrack, and you know you're going to get an explosion of retro and just awesome throwback music. Oh, dude, that's – come on, man. Dave Bautista. And that's the other thing. The comedy, man. This trailer was hilarious. And just the shots that we got, man, I think this could be Marvel's most epic.
Yeah.
Maybe Marvel's funniest movie yet. So I'm so excited for this movie.
I want a Baby Groot plush. I want a Baby Groot plushie, man, for Christmas. I mean,
and he was taking that guy out, man. He was slamming him all over the place. That's so cool.
Don't push the red button.
Come on, man. That is so awesome.
But Drax, man, that laugh. That is just epic.
I have a feeling Drax might steal the show for this.
I think his
comedy. Oh, dude.
Yeah, they're definitely playing on that. So there's so much coolness going on right now, especially. I said this last year. I remember saying this time almost last year that this is going to be – I was talking about 2016. This is going to be the year of all years.
Dude.
Well, I don't know. 2017 is looking pretty awesome right now.
Come on, man. It looks –
I know, man. So that is officially the end of our news segment. So now we're going to actually graduate into our good old history of comics. And where we left off in part three, if you go back to episode 30, we were talking about the atomic age of comics, when superheroes became atomic, when nuclear energy gave normal, ordinary men and women extraordinary abilities. So this was the time and the era around the atom bomb, around the Manhattan Project, you know, and you had espionage, you had the Cold War going on between Russia and America, and everybody was like, oh my God, you're a communist, I want to report you. And it was just crazy times. So that was part three. Now this week, part four, we're entering the dawn of the Silver Age. And the Silver Age of comics is literally I would say for me, the most monumental age, because it's when comic books saturated the market and they went from normal, ordinary pieces of paper to actually something in the mainstream media. And we'll get to that later on. So this is going to be really cool as we dive into this. And we're going to actually work on making a playlist on part 1, 2, 3. And after we're done with this one tonight, part 4, there is a finale of part 5, the modern age of comics. We'll be doing that on episode, on our 50th episode. We'll be doing the modern age. We'll be talking about Captain Marvel. We'll be talking about indie comics, how indie comics are influencing Preacher, The Walking Dead, etc. So look forward to part 5 coming up on episode 50. But right now, you know, categorized by the events of the late 50s, the dawn of the Silver Age ushered in the revolutionism of one of the Golden Age's most beloved heroes from the 40s. Now, many events during this critical era in history would spark this sudden interest in science and create a newer need for older heroes. With the help of some of the ingenious masterminds behind both DC and Marvel, an all-new dawn in comic book history was just peaking, and fans were once again revitalized and invigorated to once again read a comic book.
Mm, this is an exciting time.
No, man, this is awesome.
Oh, man. Come on. So the Silver Age of comics was a time of reinventing the wheel as the world was focused on science. Mm-hmm. The atomic age not only gave us a weapon of mass destruction, but fixated our minds on a molecular level. Right? Mm-hmm. So popular comic book genres of crime, horror, the westerns began slowly losing momentum heading into the mid-1950s. And I think it's funny how in the film industry, you kind of see the same thing now, how the western and certain crime movies are being overshadowed by comic book movies, man.
Yep.
So really what's happening in the film industry now is kind of like a shadow of what happened in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And I find that really, really
history,
cool.
History repeats itself, but in different formats.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I love that.
Think about it.
So Julius Schwartz was working at DC Comics at the time and decided to give superheroes a second chance. But with a new modern twist, science would be the mechanical instrument to the modern heroes.
Yeah.
Science, Joe. I'm sure living during that time was, okay, what's going on? But it proved to be very popular with comic book readers.
Exactly. And Julius Schwartz combined what was going on at that time in the mid to late 50s, which was the science explosion, if you will. I mean, they had just invented the nuclear bomb, and, you know, Einstein had helped America with that. And Julius Schwartz was, again, a Jewish immigrant. Let's get that out there. If you remember episode 2, the Jews escaped Nazi Germany and came to America, and that's where they started the comic book industry. So with that out of the way, we had the whole Jewish Holocaust. Julius Schwartz, he's an immigrant. He's a Jew. And so he used what he knew. And if you think about it, what created Barry Allen into The Flash?
Oh,
it was science.
It was
an explosion of random chemicals and lightning.
Yeah.
Oh, who would have thought it? It was the perfect Frankenstein project. So Julius Schwartz was literally playing that field. And you think about all the many, the atom. He's able to shrink and expand to use science, molecular levels of science. And so it was really interesting. So in October 1956, Showcase Comics, issue number 4, debuted an all-new reimagined Flash. The character, Jay Garrick, originally from the 30s and the 40s, donned the Mercury's helmet and wingtip boots, was brought to new life through the creative mind of Mr. Julius Schwartz. Now, sporting a red suit, yellow boots, and a new Flash symbol, the Flash, now named quote-unquote Barry Allen, achieved his powers from a lab experiment gone wrong. But Julius Schwartz didn't stop there. Many historians believe this particular issue that you're seeing right here, it was the turning point, and this issue marked the dawn of the Silver Age as we know it. So this one right here, this particular comic, and Julius Schwartz's ideas catapulted the entire comic book industry into what we now know as the Silver Age.
So it was The Flash.
This episode, this issue.
wow, that is cool, man. Because, I had no clue.
Because here's what happened. They started going back into 30s and 40s and getting the characters that people liked, the fan favorites. Yeah. And then they gave them updated abilities and updated backstories and origin stories. So, you know, that was, of course, the only one that really truly remained was Superman and Batman. Those two, I mean, Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne, those two are just straight up. But you get into the other B-sides, the Green Lanterns and the Green Arrows, yeah. Oliver Queens and stuff like that. Most of them were reimagined during Julius Schwartz's term.
Oh, man. So like you were just saying, he went on to totally reinvent an auto lineup of DC comic superheroes. And you said Green Lantern, Hawkman, Adam, and even John Jones, Martian Manhunter.
Or if you're on the CW's, John Jones.
John Jones.
John Jones.
John Jones. It's kind of how they pronounced it in the John Justice League Jones. Animated series, yeah. too. They said John Jones. Mm-hmm. So he was an all-new character that catapulted readers to new planets. Mm-hmm. So we weren't just on Earth anymore. We were on Mars. We were on – it was things other than what Superman was with Krypton.
Yep.
So – worlds, as we embrace both modern science and mystery, we were going to new worlds. We were going to different origin stories, new backstories, and the superhero world was really changing. So a new need for superheroes was now met. As the world faced the Cold War, science and comic superheroes merged these two worlds seamlessly.
Mm.
Now, ultimately, this revival at DC led to the rebirth of the old Justice Society of America from the 1940s to the revised Justice League of America. Oh, man. Come on, man.
Look at that.
Hit me at home, dude. Look at that, man. That is incredible. So in the Brave and the Bold comics issue number 28 was when the Justice League was introduced. DC had a hit. Mm-hmm. Now, truly, Schwartz not only was iconic in his vision for DC superheroes, but he paved the way for other comic book companies, such as Marvel, to do the same.
Exactly.
So he basically everything, Joe.
Well, he took what was working, like, you know, Green Lantern, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Barry Allen, John Jones. Well, how did John Jones become to be? What was happening in the 60s? The space race.
Oh, wow.
Apollo
yeah.
11. That's we true. Landed on the moon. Mm-hmm. So, hey, why not have a guy who is the last man of Mars, John Jones, come in and be the Martian Manhunter? So it just made sense. And that was all Julius Schwartz's ideas. And he got this idea, well, we got all these guys. Let's get them together in a group. But let's not call it what it used to be. Let's call it the Justice League. And so he did all of that. He created the supergroup. He re-envisioned all the characters. Dude had it going on. So it all began. Now, this is where Marvel comes in. It all began with a golf game between Martin Goodman, president and publisher of Marvel in the early 1960s, and a top executive from Independent News who distributed all of Marvel's comic books. The executive of Independent News shared with Martin about DC's amazing success with Justice League and that perhaps Marvel Comics should step up as well. Look at that. Martin Goodman holding the Captain America issue one. Look at that.
Wow.
He's holding the storyboard print for it. Martin returned to his offices and called in Mr. Stan Lee, the editor at the time, and requested a superhero group, if you will. Well, Martin, along with Lee and Jack Kirby, would orchestrate one of the most dominating hands in the comic book industry that has ever been seen.
Wow.
These two gentlemen that you see here, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, single-handedly created a pop culture explosion when they bought Timely Comics and converted it to Marvel Comics Entertainment Group. Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing history right here.
You know what else blows my mind, Joe?
What's that?
You know what blows my mind? Stan Lee looks old in that picture.
That was so, in the 50s, too, man.
Dude, does this guy not, like, has he just stopped aging?
No,
seriously.
He has a secret potion that he drinks. It's called Excelsior.
And, okay.
Oh, yeah. But
that is amazing.
So.
Oh, man. So as DC Comics rallied behind a revival of heroes and newer characters of the modern age, Stan the Man was working hard over at Marvel to do something similar, but instead of reinventing characters, he would just singularly create an entire franchise surrounded by his incredible team. That's just what Stanley does, man. Yeah, that's just what he does. He just doesn't create a character.
He creates a freaking brand.
He creates a brand. Oh, God. So with the aid of artist Jack Kirby, Stanley delivered its first family of comics, The Fantastic Four, issue number one, in November 1961. One of the greatest comic book series ever. Readers were blown away at the writing and penmanship of this all-new group of superheroes and how real and transparent their stories were. Joe, can I say something real quick, man?
Absolutely, man.
Is it not disappointing to you that the name of the Fantastic Four is somewhat tarnished right now because of the movies that have come out?
It is.
Because I have talked to multiple people about the Fantastic Four, and they're like, okay, well, yeah, the Fantastic Four, they suck. They're terrible. And I'm like, no. Come on, man. Mm. One of the greatest comic book families of characters ever created, and their name right now is just tarnished. And it depresses me because their stories – like this one, they were just so good.
Well, you think about the Fantastic Four, it's Marvel's first family.
Yeah.
And Marvel, when Stan Lee created these characters, DC kind of focused more so on the actual story of the character in terms of fighting and saving the planet. Marvel created the reality behind the superhero. If you think about Peter Parker, he's a flawed teenager. He's quirky, he's geeky, he's nerdy,
yeah,
and he can relate to all that entire generation of people. I mean, myself included. I mean, I fall right in the shoes of Peter Parker. You more so because you were bit by a radioactive Black Widow. So, but you're never going to live that one down. You know that, right?
Oh, no. I will take that all day and every day, man.
But,
I love
you
it.
Know, Fantastic Four number one was Stan Lee's attempt at creating the first ever brand of, and so him and Jack Kirby got together and they created, I want to say, upwards of like 220 characters in the Marvel Universe that are still hugely influential in today's comic books. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby would go on to create an entire franchise for Marvel Comics that would literally usher in such names as, are you ready for it? Look at that beautiful picture. I love that. Don't you have that? You have that picture somewhere.
I have that in poster form.
Yes. So that would literally usher in names like The Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, Doctor Doom, Silver Surfer, Thor, and an all-new Captain America, the X-Men, Spider-Man, the Avengers, Daredevil, Doctor Strange, and so many more. Not only was DC on fire at the time, but Marvel began to dominate the comic book industry as well. Stan Lee's vision of adding human characteristics to superheroes, it literally tore down the veil of what a hero is or should be, and it challenged DC Comics on that. Giving them real-life issues allowed readers to connect in a way that they never imagined before, which catapulted Marvel Comics into a pop culture icon literally almost overnight. Jack and Stan would usher in a whole new era, giving rise to the evolution of pop culture as we know it in terms of comic books.
Man. So the Marvel DC war has been going on for 75 years. Is that what you're telling me?
Quite well. If you go back to Timely Comics, when Martin Goodman was part of it.
That's true.
It's, 40s. Yeah.
Wow. That is incredible, man. So this is the point to where we're getting into something very special.
Yeah.
In 1966, ABC Studios announced its live-action television series, Batman. So some fans didn't like the fact that audiences were laughing at Batman, while others – just look at that picture – while others were thrilled to watch the episodes each week. Love it or hate it, the Batman TV series changed America from standard superhero comic books – to full-blown pop culture television phenomena. The thing that I find coolest about this, Joe, is that this series right here is what I believe spawned comic books turning into something other than comic books. You know what I mean?
This was DC's launching platform.
Yes.
It was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the series ignited yet again with new love, like I said, for comic books, and sparked a fresh welcome wave of superheroes, companies, and storylines. Even Archie Comics cashed in on the craze and formed its own league of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Though some may feel the impact of the Batman TV series and what it had on comics was negative, you can't deny that the overall success of the comic industry during the mid to late 60s. And Joe, I know that you and even I used to watch the show all the time. We grew up on the series. We admire its charm. We admire its simplicity.
Yeah.
People who trashed this series.
Well, now, you know, Austin, I personally grew up on this television series.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was born in 79. I didn't get to see the actual airings, obviously, but through the power of reruns, so I got to really admire this show's charm and just the simplicity in which it was shot, filmed, and the story would make. Tune in next time to see if the Caped Crusader and his trusty sidekick Robin can defeat the vile Joker, you know. So it was just, you know, and it made you want to tune in the next week to see really what happened. And it was just freaking awesome. And that's why it will always be timeless for me and very much enjoyable to watch.
Absolutely.
And this was, even though DC had attempted early on, they've attempted in the 40s, the Superman cartoon. If you've never seen the 40s Superman cartoon, it is just beautiful. It's
the artwork.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like, it takes you, it's like steampunkish almost. It's beautiful. Yes.
Look it up on YouTube.
And then, of course, you had George Reeves, who actually played the black and white Superman for a while, if you remember that. But for the first time, color, vivid color. And so this was actually, you were able to see the Joker's bright green hair and his crazy smile and his quirky plum colored suit. And, and you know, you were able to see Batman and Robin in full color. And it was just really awesome. And for me, personally, this was my first exposure to ever seeing a comic book come to life on television.
Really?
And it was right after this that the Incredible Hulk in the 70s come to be. So you remember Lou Ferrigno was cast as the Incredible Hulk as well. And so Marvel jumped on the idea. It's like, all right, well, if DC can have their own show, we can have ours. So they hired Bill Bixby to play David Banner, and they got Lou Ferrigno to play the Incredible Hulk. And what do you know? Marvel's got their own hit television show as well. And for a short time, they did do a Spider-Man spinoff.
I remember that.
I think it only ran for like maybe one season with 10 episodes or something like that. It was really cheesy, really campy. It was really bad.
What's funny about that, Joe?
What's that?
That was actually the first thing that I ever rented. My mom would rent the Spider-Man episodes from the library and show me.
So you got to see those old ones, right?
I got to watch those on my very small square television when I was very young. When I was younger, Spider-Man was my favorite character, and that's what made me call him Spider-Man. So. Fun little fact for you, Joe.
That is a fun little fact. And you know, the Spider-Man TV series, it ran from 77 to 79. It featured Mr. Nicholas Hammond as Peter Parker with an amazing head of hair for the 77 that he was. I mean, it was just gorgeous. There was all kinds of other things that was spawned out. But so basically what had happened was with the success of look at that. You actually found Nicholas Hammond as Spider-Man. Look at those goggles, dude.
Man.
Look at that.
So good.
Is that not cheesy?
Oh,
that looks more like a cosplayer.
So pretty sure I have that in my closet, man.
That looks like that looks so more like cheesy. A cosplayer than a film-worthy adaptation, don't it?
<It's> so cheesy.
Oh, man. You really appreciate, though, that in the 70s, there wasn't really a need for attention to detail like that.
No.
So
no.
There was
it's
no need. Yeah, it was all about simple stuff. But It was really cool because in the mid-50s and the 60s, it was a time of rebirth. Mm-hmm. It was a time of invention among the comic book industry. Both DC and Marvel, they kind of found their own formula that worked. Each was uniquely different, but both resoundingly heavy hitters. DC Comics had Batman and Superman in the Justice League. Marvel had Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Incredible Hulk, and the Avengers. So it was kind of like a very, I mean, you either
back and forth.
I mean, it was equal. So Julius Schwartz gave us the new Justice League, while Stan Lee and Jack Kirby gave us an entire brand new, fresh lineup of comics. With the addition of the Batman television series, comics were truly here to stay and left their thumbprint not only on pop culture, but on the small screen as well. And that leads us into probably episode number 50 coming up in about 10 episodes of part five, how we're going to be talking about how pop culture and comics have not only influenced a new dawn of creating like indies and stuff like that, but what are we at right now? We're actually seeing these characters that we read about for the past 40, 50 years make their silver screen debut and give them some justice that they truly deserve. So what are your thoughts on the silver age of comics as we kind of wrap up and come to a close? Do you have any like things that kind of struck you on the creations of it?
Well, I find it so incredible that the things that went down in the 50s and 60s led to this competition between DC and Marvel to just better each other. And the thing that I like about this most, competition breeds success.
It does. That's a really good quote, actually.
It's this Marvel and DC thing that's been happening for so many years, longer than 75 years. They are doing this to better. They are doing this for our entertainment. They're doing this to entertain us. And the fact that they kept going back and forth was the reason that we got all of these amazing characters. And I love the fact that everything that happened in the times led to the creation of these characters, like you said, with the science and how it applied to the creation of the Flash, and with the going off into space and how that applied to the creation of Martian Manhunter. It's so interesting. And for the people that just watched the movies, I encourage you guys to look back at the history of comic books. Watch our other videos, watch our other podcasts on this series, and just take a look at the history, man. This is so interesting. And honestly, there should be a movie about this, Joe.
Well, there actually is. The PBS Corporation put together the time capsule, the history of comics, the pop culture phenomenon. Awesome. I'll drop the link for you and anybody else that wants to have a copy of that. It's about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minute documentary. Oh, and it talks about these names that you're hearing: Martin Goodman, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Julius Schwartz, all these heavy hitters that were part of the scene back in the 40s and 50s that pretty much catapulted the comic book industry to where it is today. Just talking about being at the right place at the right time. You know, Stan Lee started at Timely Comics is nothing more than just a kid sweeping the floors. If you go back to part three in episode 30, you find that Stan Lee's just a young 19-year-old, and he's more than just, he just fills the ink wells at Timely Comics for the artists. And so as Timely Comics was kind of growing and doing it, he catapulted his level of success and became an editor. And he started editing the comics. And next thing you know, a conversation over a golf game happened between Martin Goodman and Stan Lee. It's like, you know what? You need to do something and do it quick. That was something that I don't think we ever really truly hit on. The whole development of Marvel Comics happened over a golf game.
Wow.
And
what?
I want to tell you that. This is no joke. Martin Goodman met with the editors at Marvel Comics, and he's like, okay, so what can we do to invent a brand to compete with DC? Because they have Justice League and they have heavy hitters, and we just have Timely Comics. What can we do? And so Stan Lee came in. Of course, it converted over to Marvel Comics at the time. And Stan Lee, him and Jack Kirby single-handedly created an entire franchise, 200-plus characters. I mean, you think if anybody that's been on film today in Marvel Comics that you've seen on the silver screen was probably wrote and birthed by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. And I'm not exaggerating when I say it. Thor, Fantastic Four, Silver Surfer, Incredible Hulk, The Avengers, Captain America, Iron Man, everything. Where did that come from, you know?
Joe, can we say that's the best game of golf ever played? I believe
there's a rumor that it's called the best game of golf because it's not joking you. It literally was the game that kind of put the fire under Stan Lee to create something. And his wife, Stan Lee's wife, pushed him to do it. And he wanted to. I remember there was a part in the history class that I was doing where Stan Lee had this creation that he wanted to create Spider-Man. And he didn't know how to approach the editor, just like, hey, I got this story. Can I run it? And his editor kept saying, no, this is not, nobody's going to buy this. Don't worry about this. Nobody's going to buy a book about a kid who gets bit by a spider. That's just too stupid. Yeah, well, right. A chance for it came up, and there was a series that was called Amazing Fantasy. And Amazing Fantasy premiered these weird characters. Amazing Fantasy featured Spider-Man. Amazing Fantasy number wow. one. And, of course, we had the birth of Mr. Peter Parker and fans. It flew off of store shelves.
Loved. And
his wife was the one that pushed him, like, just do it. Just get it out there.
Stan Lee's wife
yeah. is actually in the X-Men Apocalypse. She makes a cameo with
no
him.
Way.
Yeah.
No
the,
way.
The woman that he's holding is his wife.
Dude, he had to inject her with his living formula. Because yeah. I'm sure she's pretty – dang, man.
Yeah,
that's
man.
That's the cutest couple ever.
Did you know that?
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was just some random woman.
No, that's his real wife in real life.
No, you're kidding me, Joe.
Yeah,
go man. On. Don't, this has already been such a good episode. Don't throw that on me at the last second, man. My heart can't take it. My little heart.
Well, yeah. Joan B. Joan B. Lee.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So that is pretty much a wrap in terms of the history of comics and pop culture, part four. That is the dawn of the Silver Age, where comics went from something simple as a page in a magazine to actually seeing something continuously on television. And fans were hooked. I mean, it was at a time when you had Little House on the Prairie, The Waltons, Bonanza, Gunsmoke, and then here comes Batman.
How
cheesy and how campy can you be, you know? But I'm definitely excited to bring you in 10 episodes the finale of the history of comics. And I hope you guys can subscribe and be a part of that. Definitely want to hear your feedback on this week's episode. What did you think about it? What were some things that stood out about you? Did you enjoy the part about Julius Schwartz? Did you enjoy the part about, you know, him creating Flash? Or what stood out to you the most? We want to hear about it. But and as always, if you have something exciting that you want us to know about, or you see something on the shelves at your local comic book shop or in the theater and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media with our brand new hashtag, YoPopX.
Oh, so, I like that.
Yeah. So if you see something really cool on Instagram or Twitter, use the hashtag YoPopX, and that's YoPopX. If you use the hashtag, we could use your post in a future episode of PopX Live. So if you see something really cool, you go and see Star Wars Rogue One in a couple of weeks, and just get a selfie in front of the picture and hashtag it YoPopX. We'll feature that right here on the show for you. So,
oh man,
yeah,
moving up in the world, Joe.
I'm
That's
telling
so
you,
cool.
man.
Oh man, we are also part of an amazing network called the Going to Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to goingtogeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network. You can also follow us on these social medias. We have Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, Pinterest, all at PopXCast. You can email us at popxcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from our listeners. Also, for future and past shows, check out our official website, www.popxcast.com. I am Austin Burke at the Burkinator with a 3 instead of the E. It's like the Baconator, but it's me. You can search and find me there. Also, I have YouTube. I am Austin Burke. I do movie reviews and reaction. You can subscribe to me or just do something else with your life, whatever.
His reactions are pretty priceless, I will say.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
And I am Joe Burke at Rotcav, R-O-T-C-A-V, on the internet. And, of course, hats off to Team PopX. This has been an amazing show. Team Lindsay Badger over in the chat room has been throwing down some major love. We got Anna hanging out. We've got Moonshadow hanging out. We got Luke and Carlos. We have a plethora of friends hanging out with us tonight. We feel very blessed and humbled you chose to choose PopX tonight. And Mr. Mike Ippolito from all the way up in Queens, New York, managing the slides this week. Mike, much love.
Now,
to you. Oh, you had
Come
to
on,
do
man.
The baby Groot.
Some, well, it's more.
No, that's more like sapling Groot.
It's a little baby. It's a
little baby. All right. We love you, Mike. So please join us next week for December the 11th. This will be episode number 41, our Christmas special, which will be Christmas traditions and PopX's wish list. Look at our graphic for that 8-bit retro, man. Isn't that
cool?
That's
what we had so far. Oh, man.
So, awesome. Batting down the hatches as Team PopX dives into some Christmas traditions from our family to yours. And we just share some Christmas love as we go into the holiday season. Of course, the episode right after that will be our Rogue One review. So we got some really cool episodes coming up for you for the Christmas season. So, Austin, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight.
Joe, it's good to be back, man. I will become Spider-Man eventually.
Well, you know, with great power comes great authority and great responsibility. So,
yeah, that makes me happy.
Yeah, it makes me happy too. All right, well, take care, and we will see you next time right here on PopX Cast. Take us out, Mr. Colin.
From everyone at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, all at PopX Cast. Get your geek on.